From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In this month's issue of her magazine, Martha Stewart Living, Martha Stewart answered questions about pickling sweet corn and restoring bird cages. She may soon find herself answering much tougher questions. As early as next week, congressional investigators are considering turning up the heat and compelling Stewart to testify about her sale of ImClone stock. Martha Stewart wouldn't be the first, and surely not the last, big executive to be called to Capitol Hill to answer questions about business dealings in this season of uproar over crooked business. But is there something different about the country's fascination with Martha? The small-town girl from Nutley, New Jersey, has set the table and standard for home entertaining with a multimedia empire that raked in $295 million in sales last year. The self-appointed expert on everything from weddings to welding garden furniture is revered by her followers and reviled by critics. Now, with allegations of insider trading whipping around her like bad clothes drying on the line, is Martha Stewart getting her just dessert or being singled out for unfair treatment? Is this justice or the revenge of the Martha bashers? What do you make of the Martha mess? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us tonight from Detroit, Michigan is Keith Naughton. He's the Detroit bureau chief for Newsweek magazine and has written extensively about Martha Stewart. Good evening and welcome, Keith Naughton.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. With us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Naughton.
Hi.
Keith Naughton, I guess explain for us first why Newsweek's Detroit bureau chief is covering Martha Stewart.
Well, I sort of got into the Martha story through Kmart. I'm here in Detroit, where Kmart is based, and I covered Kmart's bankruptcy back in January, and Martha was a part of that since her Martha Stewart Everyday line is sold in Kmart.
Of course, that's right. A huge business relationship between Kmart and Martha Stewart.
Exactly. So that sort of got me onto the Martha Stewart story. A little did I know back in January, though, that it would turn the way it has.
It has turned out to be something, certainly huge in media terms and maybe huge in business terms as well, given that you've got a Kmart bankruptcy here, you've got Martha Stewart OmniMedia, a very large publicly traded company in itself, and you've got this great American figure at the middle of all this. Tell us, first of all, if you would, Keith Naughton, where does the inquiry into Martha Stewart's personal and corporate business dealings stand at this point?
Well, as one of the congressional investigators told me last week, things are really now, this whole controversy is coming to a head. Something's going to happen very soon here. What the congressional investigators tell me is that they're strongly considering subpoenaing her and bringing her to Capitol Hill. It could happen as soon as next week. They're already looking at dates on their calendar for when they can have the hearing. So Martha, who's sort of bunkered down since that appearance on the CBS Early Show that went so badly for her a couple of months ago, we really haven't seen her in public. It looks like the next time we'll see her in public will probably be in a congressional hearing room.
Now, there's more than one line of attack at this point. There's also a shareholder lawsuit that we should talk about. But first, spell out for us what it is that has the congressional committee's attention that they're pressing on with Martha Stewart.
Well, it is the events of December the 27th, which is the ImClone, the day she sold her ImClone shares. It's also the day that Sam Wachtel's daughter sold her ImClone shares. Sam Wachtel was then CEO of ImClone. And what the federal indictment alleges against Sam Wachtel is that he alerted two family members, his daughter and his father, and they sold stock. It happens that Martha Stewart's broker is the same broker as Eliza Wachtel, Sam's daughter. So there's what it appears, what they're investigating, is that Martha, through her broker or through her broker's assistant, received some tip that the Wachtel family was dumping stock, perhaps because Martha knew, as Sam Wachtel did, that the FDA was about to reject ImClone's promising cancer drug and the stock was about to tank. In any event, that's the insider trading piece of it.
And let's look at that for one more second, Keith Naughton. For those of us who don't deal with this kind of thing every day, it's not clear where the lines are here. If Martha Stewart's broker knew that the Wachtels were selling stock and advised Martha on that basis to sell stock, does that make Martha ipso facto an inside trader?
No. If the only thing the broker was passing along was that he knew that the Wachtels were selling stock, that in and of itself may not be insider information. It would require the broker to say, the Waxels are selling stock because they know tomorrow the FDA is going to reject their drug. That would be inside information. Simply knowing that large shareholders are selling does not necessarily mean inside information.
But last week, Martha Stewart's attorneys turned over 1,000 documents, we're told, about the communications on this single day, December 27th. Have they found a smoking gun? Have they found evidence that she knew that this was more than just a family trend, that there was a real inside piece of information here?
They say they haven't found a smoking gun. What has sort of has their suspicions up, though, is that they keep finding things that poke holes in Martha's story, because Martha doesn't even say that she knew the family was selling.
What's her story?
Martha's story is that she sold on that day, fortuitously, as it turned out, because she had a verbal, what's called a stop-loss order, a prearranged sell order with her broker, Peter Bakanovic, saying if the stock fell below $60, we should automatically sell it.
Mm-hmm.
She says she had no insider information. This sale was completely legitimate. It was because of the stop-loss order. But the whole story of the stop-loss order has been losing credibility through the summer because the broker's assistant, Douglas Fanwell, has told federal investigators looking into it that there was no stop-loss order. And, in fact, the broker, he says, pressured him to tell Martha that the Waxels were selling.
So, which means that even if she isn't hit on insider trading charges, there's a kind of obstruction of justice charge that could be here.
Well, that's what, you know, it's sort of Nixonian. That's what could really end up hanging her up here. It's very hard to prove insider trading if you don't have some hard record of the conversation showing that there was inside tips passed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have here is a conversation between Martha and her broker that was done via cell phone as they're both traveling, so there is no record of it. What could really hang her up is obstruction of justice charges. If her alibi turns out to be a fiction, then she's obstructed an investigation. And as you say, there's more than one investigation here. There's a three-course investigation going here. You've got the congressional probe.
All right.
You've got the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan is investigating this. That's who has already indicted Sam Waxel. Mm-hmm. And you've got the SEC looking into this, too. So there's three investigations going on simultaneously with this.
Keith Naughton, you deal in covering business plenty. What's the assessment of people in the business world? Is this amount of attention on the Martha Stewart case, which involves something like $227,000 that she made on the M-Clone trade, as I understand.
Right.
Is the amount of attention being paid to this out of proportion with the crime in an era in which we've got companies, you know, with multi-hundred-million-dollar apparent scams going on? Is Martha getting singled out for tougher treatment than others?
She's certainly getting a greater deal of scrutiny because she's a celebrity. She's known to the world in a way that Sam Waxel never was and never will be. And she's come to personify this trend lately of CEO misdeeds, whether she's done it or hasn't done it. She is the epitome of you know, the Enrons and the WorldComs and the Tycos and all of the companies whose CEOs we'd never heard of before until, you know, they made the headlines for what they had done or what they were presumed to do. Mm. We all knew Martha Stewart, and all of a sudden she's one of these CEOs being accused of wrongdoing. So she's become the lightning rod. She's become the poster child for CEO bad behavior.
But Jack Beatty, I guess Martha Stewart being a celebrity in itself doesn't seem to fairly make her a target for greater scrutiny than other executives who may have had more dollars moving in the wrong direction.
Well, that's certainly true, but there's the fact. The public mm-hmm. knows about her, and so that creates a political problem and one that she's aware of. Some people on Capitol Hill have even said, well, they're bringing her up here, that is a Republican-chaired committee, because she's a big Democratic contributor. Who knows whether that's part of this? But it is interesting that the day after these revelations came out, she didn't do her show live, and she substituted a tape. And the tape was of a program she had with Billy Towson.
Himself the chairman of the committee
this.
Looking into her.
He's going to be the chairman of the committee, and they were talking about Louisiana cooking, and it was I don't know, a kind of a perky and perhaps even hardball gesture from Martha saying, hey, Billy, you and I remember when.
I know how to make your gumbo.
Yeah. Right.
Keith Naughton, I guess the insider trading charge isn't the only thing that's floating around out there. The shareholder lawsuit seems to suggest that Martha Stewart also may have sold shares in her own company based on advanced knowledge that Kmart, a close ally, an important ally, was flirting with bankruptcy. Have I got that right?
No, actually, the shareholder suit focuses on M-Clone and Martha Stewart Living Media Omnicom. There's another story today in the New York Post that talks about what she knew about Kmart and when she sold her stock. Martha sold about $45 million in Martha Stewart Living Omnicom, her own company, stock, in January the 8th, and that was the same day that federal investigators began probing Sam Wachsell's trading in M-Clone stock. So the shareholder suit alleges that she and then subsequently other executives and board members of her own company were dumping Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia shares in advance of, you know, the public disclosure that she was linked to the M-Clone insider trading scandal. That suit was filed last week by a shareholder of Martha Stewart's company saying that, you know, Martha Stewart and her executives and directors sold $79 million in Martha Stewart's stock, that they were insider trading in Martha Stewart's own stock to avoid the bad publicity that would come and the you know, subsequent stock slide that Martha Stewart's stock has suffered once the M-Clone investigation became public.
Keith Naughton, what are the stakes here for this celebrity and very successful businesswoman who has built a business empire? How much does she stand to lose, and does she even risk jail time?
She does, and she's lost a lot already because she built this empire on her name. She personifies, she is the brand. And as goes Martha Stewart, so goes her company. We've seen that all summer with the stock, which has fallen by nearly 60%. The interesting thing is, yes, she sold that stock on December the 27th for $227,000. Had she sold it after the news of the FDA rejection had come out, she would have netted $48,000 less. So in other words, she made $48,000 extra dollars by selling it before the bad news came out. Her own stock, she holds a lot of her own stock. On paper, this summer, because of the stock slide and Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia, she's lost something like $250 million. So for $48,000, she lost $250 million.
Does it seem as though this could be the end of the Martha Stewart story? Are things that dire? Are the stakes that high?
The stakes are extremely high. She has to really sort of turn things around here, and she hasn't shown a great ability to PR her way out of this very well. She's had some PR blunders as she's gone through this whole process. One of the biggest ones was the way she handled the interview on the CBS Early Show.
For those of us who didn't see it, describe that for us.
Oh, it was as a friend of mine described it, theater of the absurd. She went on the CBS, and she has a weekly cooking segment on CBS every Wednesday. And the folks at CBS alerted her, look, you know, this is in the news. We can't ignore this. If you're coming on our show, we have to ask you questions about this.
Fair enough.
Exactly. And you know, to CBS's credit, she consulted with her lawyers. Finally, the deal she reached is, okay, you can ask me the questions, but I'm not going to sit for an interview. You have to do it while I'm whipping up my summer salads in my TV kitchen.
Oh, no.
So there you have Jane Clayson, you know, trying to grill her about M-Clone, and Martha, you know, trying to wave off these questions while she's holding a giant knife in her hand shredding cabbage.
Oh, that must have been some finely shredded cabbage.
Yeah, and she's saying, you know, in the very near future, I'll be exonerated of any ridiculousness. And she's rolling her eyes, and Jane Clayson keeps pressing. And finally she gets all upset and says, I just want to focus on my salad. and that's sort of the defining quote of this whole controversy.
Martha Stewart just wants to focus on her salad, Jack Beatty, and that salad has made her a fortune that's now in peril.
Yeah, it has, and you know, and as our guest says, I mean, it was her own image that she built up, and you have to wonder, you know, what we see with her, I think, is that executive mind in Xanadu. We've seen it with these other people too. I mean, think of what her day is like—the blanket of wall-to-wall deference that surrounds her from the time she gets up to the time she goes to bed. All of that, after a while, takes you a prisoner, and you think you can do anything, you know. And I think we've seen that again and again with these execs. You know, they're victims of their own of their own success in that respect.
Hubris, they call it. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart in trouble. Is the country unfairly thrashing Martha Stewart, or should Martha just step up and take the rap if she's guilty? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart and her business empire in real trouble. Did you feel a twinge of glee at the news of Martha Stewart's legal trouble? Is America out to get Martha? Or is this simply a well-deserved investigation of lawbreaking? Did Martha get bitten by the greed bug? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Our guest tonight is Keith Naughton. He's Detroit bureau chief with Newsweek magazine, who's been covering the Martha Stewart story. And we're happy to be joined now by Caitlin Flanagan. She's a contributing editor for the Atlantic Monthly. Her piece about Martha Stewart, entitled Home Alone, appears in the September issue of the Atlantic Monthly. Good evening and welcome, Caitlin Flanagan.
Hello, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Caitlin Flanagan, help us understand, beyond this nettle of legal concerns that look really serious for Martha Stewart, what is her position in the American mind after more than a decade now of tutoring the nation on good taste and how to make this and how to design that? What's the role that Martha Stewart plays in our minds, and does it set her up for more admiration or for more envy and maybe some kind of dark joy at her trouble now?
Well, I think there's no doubt that when 100 years from now someone sets out to write a cultural history of our time and our place, there's going to be a great big chapter reserved for Martha Stewart. If you were writing a similar book on the 19th century and I said, well, there was one woman about whom every single homemaker had very strong feelings, either pro or con, and who had a magazine that millions of women read, you'd want to know a lot about that figure, and that figure is Martha Stewart.
What is it about her view of life, her aesthetic, her way of talking to America and Americans that's made her such a force in that realm?
I think the key word is the second, her aesthetic. She has really created a visual style which women, in huge numbers, absolutely love. I'm not a big fan of the person of Martha Stewart, whom I know only through television and magazines, mm-hmm. but I think the things that she's created are absolutely beautiful. And her visual style has so completely permeated women's magazines and catalogs that it's hard for the untrained eye to really trace it all back. But I was looking this morning at Pottery Barn's catalog and Restoration Hardware's catalog, and you saw all of these interiors that were extremely uncluttered and extremely clean, almost undecorated rooms, absolutely empty of people. And that's a real Martha Stewart look. The difference between those catalogs and an actual Martha Stewart catalog would be that you'd have a very strong feminine element, a riotously blooming bouquet mm-hmm. of flowers, or a very feminine palette to the furniture. But she has really created a style, a visual style, that lots of women really like and that was new and that was fresh. And she's also done something that people kind of forget about, which is that she has – there's that fine line with all the really big cultural figures where you have to ask, to what extent has this person predicted the next big trends, and to what extent have they forged them? And with Martha Stewart and every single big female trend of the last 20 years, she was on the ball. The return to formal white weddings, which came along in the 1980s after formal white weddings were considered very square in the 1960s and 70s. And the Reagans came back with stylish entertaining, and Charles and Diana had that fairy tale wedding. And Martha Stewart came out right after that wedding, 2 years later, with a huge, expensive coffee table book on weddings. It was an enormous bestseller. And you ask anybody in the $70 billion wedding industry whose name is most associated with this huge business, it's Martha Stewart's name.
So you're describing, Caitlin Flanagan, an American universe in which Martha Stewart is kind of the set designer for our lives, not only, I guess, at the affluent level, but through Kmart, even at the median income.
Well, there's the brilliant thing about her. A lot of people, she has so many naysayers, and a huge group of them, when she went heavily into Kmart with the Martha Stewart Everyday line, said, oh, this is it for Martha Stewart. Mm-hmm. Now she's taken her upmarket lifestyle, her Turkey Hill, you know, allure, and she's brought it to yucky old Kmart. This is terrible. But what she said, and boy, was she right, was that she has an ability to kind of cross lots of different social class lines and socioeconomic lines. She didn't downtrade her appeal to upper-income women, and she didn't seem to be high and mighty above lower-income women. They all just feel that she creates a very beautiful, clean, feminine look that they really admire and that they want to have in their homes.
So, Caitlin Flanagan, you write that Martha Stewart seems to depict some parallel universe in which loveliness and order are untrammeled by the surging chaos of life in session. If that's the case, and if Americans are as much in the thrall, whether knowingly or not, of the Martha Stewart look as you describe, why this apparent ready to gleefully see her brought down?
You know, I compared her in the piece to a character about you have to be of a certain age to get disillusioned. Sue Ann Nivens was the Betty White character on the wonderful old Mary Tyler Moore show, this brilliant sitcom of the 70s.
All right.
And her character, the whole idea behind it was that she was the star of kind of a happy homemaker show. Mm-hmm. And she would show up in her frilly apron and she'd be wearing these high heels and she'd talk about making souffles and cooking. And as soon as the camera off, she was this very lusty kind of randy woman who was always going after Murray, and she was always disparaging poor old Ted Baxter, the inept newscaster. And it was just a character was ripe with comedic possibility. And when I was watching a reunion show of the Mary Tyler Moore Show while I was writing the piece, I thought, this is Martha Stewart. It's just the idea that she's giving us all this homemaking advice, but she's not someone settled down to a cozy, happy, traditional marriage. Her marriage kind of ended in a notorious flame out. She doesn't have lots of children to whom she has a very famously close relationship. She has one child, and relations have been quite stormy on and off between her and her daughter. And that kind of confluence of here's exactly how to run your house, but it's unmoored from a traditional woman running a house, it invites kind of a very comedic situation that people love to poke fun at.
But there's nothing funny about what's going on now. It's actually the destruction of Martha Stewart that is at issue here. Is this a kind of, we don't have Sigmund Freud on with this, but it almost sounds like something Oedipal or whatever the maternal counterpart of that is.
Electra, is it?
Maybe electrifying. Of course, people have always liked to poke holes at Martha Stewart, but to actually bring her down, to see her go down in flames, maybe the appreciation of the aesthetic is less than the rage over executive misbehavior.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think, you know, this is the third interview that I've been involved with since writing the piece, and it's always been conducted by men, and they are always quite certain that this is the end for Martha Stewart. But when I talk to women, they are quite certain that it's not the end for Martha Stewart. Now, everything that I know about insider trading, I learned during the last 10 minutes. So I can't in any respect top what Keith has added to the conversation.
Right.
And it certainly sounds very serious, and my heart was racing when he was speaking, and I thought it was with nerves about being on point. But I realized it all sounded so serious and frightening that I was just in a panic for Martha Stewart.
The fate of Martha.
The fate of Martha. But I'll tell you what, I think it was Keith was saying she is the brand. She may
yes,
be the brand,
is.
But she's not the products. And that Martha Stewart everyday line is a very, very good line of products that people have a lot of faith in. Her magazine, although obviously it bears her name and it bears her pictures, it's a very fine magazine. It's a beautifully put together magazine. There's going to have to be some sleight of hand if she's going to have to step down from that, because obviously it is her name. We don't know what she's going to do next. But I'll tell you what, she's got 9 lives. I would not count her out for a second. And if a scandal in her sort of personal life were going to unseat her, I think a horrible divorce should have unseated her from being our guru of weddings. But it didn't.
And beautiful domesticity.
All sorts of scandals, have come up that I would have thought would have affected her. Now, if she ends up in the slammer, I mean, it's such a juicy and thrilling and horrifying possibility. And what will happen next, time will tell. But I would have a feeling she, if I had to put money on it, which I certainly wouldn't, but if I did, I'd say she's going to come through this.
Caitlin Flanagan, stand by. I want to put we've got a whole new view here. I want to put it to Keith Naughton. Keith, Caitlin points to a kind of a bedrock support of the Martha Stewart aesthetic among Americans, perhaps American women in particular, that she feels will pull her through. But how much can a brand, can an individual, can a company take on the criminal and scandal side when the stakes grow so large and still come through?
Yeah, I like Caitlin's idea of there being a gender divide here. I think she may be onto something, actually. My issue with Martha and her importance to the company, sort of the business issue here, is that it's not only just that Martha's the brand, but the brand is about Martha's perfection. She's perfect. She hand carves ice wreaths for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
She in one of her early Christmas books, she had this absolutely fabulous gingerbread house that she made. It was gorgeous. I wanted to live in it. And where I the newspaper I was working at the time, our food writer hired an architect, and the two of them spent a week trying to put it together, and they couldn't do it. You know, it's
not even with an architect. But does that mean that a little time in the slammer would take the sheen off?
Well, the thing is, if your image is all about perfection, it's why we love and hate her both. You know, she's so maddeningly perfect. And as one of her advertisers in Martha Stewart Living magazine told us, if her image is all about perfection, and this shows that there's a flaw in that perfection, then maybe that's not who you want to be associated with anymore.
Jack Beatty, is this waking us up from the 90s American dream, which Martha Stewart had a huge place in, and now it's running up against just plain old executive misbehavior?
Yeah, it sounds that way. I have to say, I don't know anything about her. I mean, I only know what I've been reading in the paper lately. But just from what Caitlin wrote and from listening to Keith and from reading other things, I formed myself a kind of nickel and dime theory about this. And it is that just when American women are, by all accounts, torn between their jobs and their children, just when one illness in the family can throw your entire, with the dog, can throw your whole week out of kilter, just when everybody is in this time famine, along comes this personage whose whole sort of burden, it seems to me, or at least as an outsider, mm-hmm. would seem to be guilt, telling American women, don't sit there, make a Christmas wreath. You know, what are you doing wasting time sleeping? You could be up fixing a birdcage. And, you know, you almost get the feeling here that some of the disorders in American life that and the problems are denied by this perfection. It's almost like a kind of sympathetic magic. If we get the appearance right, boy, the reality will follow, like a kind of sympathetic magic act. Anyway, that's how I've been sort of explaining her appeal to my admittedly, primitive sensibility.
Jack, you are primitive on this point, we see. But still, it is fascinating whether this is making people feel guilty or maybe whether it's creating an alternate universe that people love to live in. Listeners, what do you think about the story, the fate, the prospects for Martha Stewart? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Barbara's on the line. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
The point I'd like to make, and this kind of responds a little bit to what Mr. Norton was just saying, is I feel we have to differentiate between criticizing Martha Stewart because she's a powerful woman, powerful CEO,
mm-hmm.
And criticizing her because of a mismatch between the behavior she's exhibited and her personal brand as she's been selling it to us.
So you want to look at any potential misdoing on its own terms and leave aside whatever the character of her business is?
Well, I think what I'm trying to say is that I think when you decide to develop a personal brand, which is really like a cartoon, a simplification of yourself,
mm-hmm.
then anything that happens from a scandal perspective that's a mismatch between that cartoon you created and the reality, well, of course, it's very entertaining. People are going to respond to it with a lot of attention.
Are you saying then that it's right for Martha Stewart to pay extra because she created such a vaunted personal image?
Absolutely.
It just comes with the territory.
She made a lot of money from doing it initially, and if she had been able to maintain that level,
mm-hmm.
Well, more power to her.
Caitlin Flanagan, how about it? Barbara's saying Martha Stewart set herself up high, and if her actions bring her low, that comes with the territory.
Well, clearly, as Keith was saying at the beginning, the main thing that's putting her so in the news is really just her celebrity. It's always very juicy and fabulous when a celebrity commits or is accused of committing a crime. The big story before Martha did this was Winona Ryder being accused of shoplifting, and there's just that old idea in celebrity culture in America, whether you're a CEO or whether you're a famous actress, that there's something lurid and titillating and thrilling about the idea of them being thrown very hard and very far from a high place. So I think, yeah, that there may be something to that with Martha Stewart.
Keith Naughton, do you think that there's something going on here that's severe enough in the handling of Martha Stewart that it may be pulling attention away from other more, I don't know, more significant cases?
There are cases with much larger dollar figures attached and with much more egregious behavior attached. In the same issue of Newsweek that my Martha Stewart story is this week, there's also a story about the fellow from Enron who copped a plea last week.
Mr. Copper.
Yes, having all sorts of personal use from a slush fund from one of the Enron, you know, mysterious partnerships. So, I mean, there's some really bad behavior by a lot of people that we've never heard of and don't know, and somehow that's not going to resonate. It's not going to tell us the story of executive wrongdoing the way Martha Stewart does.
Steve's on the line. Welcome, Steve. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
I frankly think this is sort of a lot of people covering their backsides and going after Martha Stewart.
How so?
Well, when you look at it, it's $40,000, not a lot of money in the sense she didn't bring down a whole company that lots of people had lots of money tied up in. She may have brought down her image, and you can argue about whether her magazine will continue as well as it did without her. But I got to tell you, there aren't lots of Kmart shoppers that care a whole lot about insider trading, and if they're going to watch a bunch of congressmen, many who go to Washington with not a lot of money and retire with a lot, you know, talk happens between people that have access to each other. And this is, everybody knows this.
So you're sticking up for Martha here, Steve.
I am no fan of Martha's at all, but it is absolutely a railroad job being done on her, in my opinion. I mean, she is this perfect figure. She is well-known. She's a perfect celebrity to hold up and make an example
but
out
Steve,
of.
But, Steve, she's also the CEO of a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange in which a lot of people have had a lot of dollars invested. Doesn't that mean she has more than a PR image to live up to?
She absolutely should not be let off the hook. You're right there. But to make an example out of her, and I mean, we've talked about some, or you've mentioned some of the lesser-known characters mm-hmm. that have really done some egregious things and screwed lots of people out of millions and millions of dollars. This was $40,000. And I actually...
Before we repeat that figure, I think we've got to look at all the losses, even potentially losses of many millions, as Keith Naughton says, in Martha Stewart's company that shareholders have lost at this point.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. But whether or not her actions caused that slowdown, we've all seen this whole meltdown in this gyrating stock market over the last 18 months. You know, if Martha Stewart is the chief executive and sold a huge amount of stock, she had to do a filing, I believe, with the FEC before she sold anything, the SEC, rather.
There's a lot to track down here. Steve, thank you for your call. Caitlin Flanagan, here's a man coming to Martha's defense, but is it a persuasive defense?
Well, I think he brings up something that's really interesting to me, and I guess I have to ask Keith about it, which is that the initial charge of the insider trading with ImClone, Keith, it seems to me in what I've read about it that it's often cast as a bit of corporate wrongdoing, but isn't that really a bit of personal financial wrongdoing?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not about Martha Stewart living OmniMedia breaking the law. It is about Martha Stewart herself. And a key distinction here is that she's not accused, other than in the shareholder lawsuit that came out last week, she's not been accused of wrongdoing with her own company, you know, pillaging the pension fund or you know, driving her company into the ground. It's all about this sale of stock that she had in her own portfolio.
For personal profit. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart in trouble. Is the country unfairly thrashing Martha Stewart, or should Martha just step up and take the rap if she's guilty? We're at 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart in real trouble. Our guests tonight are Caitlin Flanagan. She's a contributing editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Her piece in the September issue of the magazine is entitled Home Alone. And by Keith Naughton, Detroit Bureau Chief of Newsweek Magazine. He's been covering the Martha Stewart story for that magazine. You are welcome to join us as well. Has the country grown up enough to be perfectly fair to a hyper-successful woman? Should we give Martha Stewart a break or send her to jail if that's what the evidence requires? Is this what it means to do business in the big leagues today? Or has Martha outwitted herself this time? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Shirley's on the line. Welcome, Shirley. You're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm a big fan of Martha Stewart, and I've given a great deal of serious thought to the distinct possibility she might have some prison time. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I need to tell you that my daughter ran the island of Alcatraz for 7 years.
And the tourist destination.
Well, it is. Yes, it is. But it's a prison.
All right.
Right. And
Shirley, we feel you setting us up now. Where are we headed here?
No. I promise. I'll speed up. So I had the opportunity to spend several nights there in a cell and several days and in the cafeteria. And I think that Martha Stewart would be the best thing that could happen to the prison system.
In what respect, Shirley?
Well, we'd do away with those cheap plastic trays. We'd have a crystal instead of tin cups. We'd have gingerbread houses in the shape of the prisons. And it would be very redeeming psychologically. I know it has been for me. And also, we could get them to make their own clothing, so that we're saving the taxpayers a lot of money. I think, Tom, she would bring class to an obviously classless society.
Okay, we'll take your joke, and they're good points on the humor side all, but do you think she should go in the slammer if that's where the evidence points, Shirley?
Yes, I do.
And that's that. Shirley, thank you for your call and for the redecorating look ahead. Andy's in the line. Welcome, Andy. You're on the air.
Whoa. Can Caitlin jump in a second?
Caitlin wants to speak to the redecoration of Alcatraz or wherever Martha might land.
You know, at the risk of sounding like someone who can't get a joke, I've thought a lot about what Shirley was saying about what Martha might be able to add to prison life.
And so has Jay Leno, and so has David Letterman. And what's your conclusion?
Well, my conclusion, I'm afraid, is not at all comic. But that, remember when Jean Harris went to prison? She was accused and convicted of killing Tarnauer, the famous Scarsdale diet doctor.
Yes.
And Jean Harris had been a headmistress of Madeira School in Virginia, this very Tony girls boarding school in Virginia. And Jean Harris became this absolute model prisoner in the sense that she had a tremendous effect on the other women who were in prison with her. And I know this sounds very facetious, but I must say that prison life, particularly for women, is an extremely demeaning thing, and that Martha Stewart just might rise to the occasion. And if she does go to jail, you know, we all assume that it would be kind of a Leona Helmsley moment where she'd go kicking and screaming. But who knows? I've always thought of her. I'm someone who in private schools for a long time before becoming a writer. And the kind of person she strikes me most like is kind of a stern headmistress type of person. So she kind of reminds me of a Jean Harris. So I would just have to say that I think Shirley might be less facetious than we might have at first thought. I think that's an excellent input from Shirley.
You're saying that Martha might go take her cod liver oil, do the redemptive time in prison, and perhaps be a model prisoner and then some.
You never know.
You never know. Andy's on the line. Welcome, Andy. You're on the air.
I think it's only going to help her anyway. I mean, everybody would like to see Martha rumble in the prison yard anyway. But, I mean, all this is only going to help her because it makes her a real person, you know? I mean, everybody would like to go into her house and find that one kitchen junk drawer with just nothing but garbage.
Nutty string.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to make her... actually, it'll probably expand her appeal, just the way, you know, there was a theory that Reebok would be able to reach a better audience when that basketball player got locked
so
up.
So making Martha look real. Andy, thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, what's your political sense of Billy Towson, the committee chairman, using Martha, perhaps setting her up as an example? Could it backfire on a man on a congressional committee sending Martha down the river?
Well, that's very interesting. I don't know. I think they have to be careful. She is a public figure. And from what I've read about her, and again, it's just from Caitlin's article, she's a person, she's a self-making person. She really kind of made herself in this life. And appearances, the appearance of herself is a creation of her will. And it took a heck of a lot of will to get where she was to where she is now. But maybe an excess of it, too. I'm just curious, is there, in this sort of riot of schadenfreude we all sort of feel about this, is there a payback here, Caitlin, for this guilty thing I'm talking about, or is this just in my imagination that she makes women feel guilty?
Well, as I say, we have to remember that there are a huge number of women who have a very unconflicted and positive feeling about Martha Stewart.
And they like it, and that's that.
And that's that. And, you know, when I was originally watching Martha Stewart on television, I assumed that everybody was feeling the way that I was feeling, which was that, boy, she seems really off-putting and scary, but she's creating very beautiful things. However, there's a huge number of people who just say that the words they use to describe her on television, that she's very warm, she's very nice, she's very supportive. And so I think there's certainly a large segment of people, and particularly a lot of journalists, who are very excited to see her take a fall. But there's also a huge core of people who may not buy stock and trade stock in Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia, but who may buy Martha Stewart every day, and who may log on to her Martha by mail, and who may buy her Sherwin-Williams paints. And I think those people don't feel conflicted about her at all. Although Jack's larger point, I think, is absolutely right, which is that here we have, at the very period in which the women's movement has fundamentally reshaped the way that women relate to their work in the house. And this whole idea that almost anything you do at home is a kind of drudgery that you must liberate yourself from or share equally with your husband or, you know, completely get rid of with every convenience food possible.
And Martha says, oh, no.
At the very time, who's risen up but someone who's saying it must be brought to the heights of perfection? Now, something that I noted in my piece is that, you know, every single feature in Martha Stewart Living is about very complex projects and very complex foods, but all the advertisements are for convenience foods. They're for Hormel home-cooked roast or pre-cooked roast beef and Wendy's
Jell-O.
Salad bar and Jell-O. And you get a sense, you know, advertisers are very savvy. They have a very keen sense of what the readers really want to do and how they're really living their lives,
so
I should
maybe
say.
That we just feast on her alternate universe. I want to get a couple more calls. Deb's calling from Chicago. Hi, Deb. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You guys have it all wrong. Martha is being railroaded. I didn't realize until I heard it on your show that she is a large donor to the Democratic Party, but I was pretty sure she wasn't a large donor to the Republican Party. And also, she is a very successful, high-powered woman.
And you think that still makes her a target, Deb?
I think that for the Republicans, if they know that they have to sacrifice somebody, some CEO, she's certainly preferable to Ken Lay or to, I don't know, any of the other.
But Deb, no one's saying she's going to be alone. There are already any number of men who have been prosecuted and more to come, we're told.
Well, and let's hope there's a lot more to come, but I think she's being persecuted. Long before she's being prosecuted. She, you know, I don't know how Martha can have a fair trial. And, you know, unless they do have absolutely scathing information on her, I do consider her selling that stock as kind of a puny little, you know, business compared to Enron and World, you know, Corp and all of these.
We got it. We got your view from Chicago, Devin. We appreciate it. There's the persecution, not prosecution. Let's get one more call from David. You're on the air, David.
Hi, I want to make two quick points. One is, as you may be aware, she worked as a stockbroker very successfully for a number of years.
Yes, we know.
So this isn't something that she was uninformed, if she's in fact guilty of doing anything inappropriate with stock. It isn't something that she was uninformed about. And for what it's worth, as to whether she's very sweet and wonderful, I know one person who worked with her in Connecticut before she was famous and a cook who worked with her in Boston. Once she was a very big deal, and they both have really dreadful stories about how she treated people. So at least from my perspective, from what I hear, I'm not at all sad to see her held to task if, in fact, she is guilty of anything.
David, our time is running down, but thanks for your call. Caitlin Flanagan, just a final thought. What about the backstage stories we hear that Martha's evil, Martha's mean? Should we give those credence?
Well, I've certainly heard enough of them to think there's probably something to them. But I would say I wouldn't want to be too quick on this gender thing. Mm-hmm. I had a producer of a show saying to me, oh, it's just because she's a woman, isn't it? They'd never do this to a man. They'd never tell these nasty stories of what he's like as a boss. You know, I live in Los Angeles, and the stories about what it was like to work for Michael Ovitz when he was at CAA, the stories of what it's like to work for Michael
legend.
Eisner at Disney, they're legend. And I think that, you know, big, powerful people who are bosses, you know, and who are nasty, the stories are told about them. I don't think that particularly has to do. There's a particular cant and slant to the stories that's female-oriented, but I think it has to do with her being sounds like kind of a nasty boss and very powerful one at that.
Caitlin Flanagan, it's been great having you tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Caitlin Flanagan is a contributing editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Keith Naughton, you've been there and we've lost track, but your final thought here tonight, you still think she's in trouble?
I do, and I think, yes, this was a very small stock trade, and Watergate was a very small break-in. But what could really bring her down is the cover-up, and that's what she has to worry about now.
Keith Naughton, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Keith Naughton is Detroit Bureau Chief for Newsweek magazine. Jack Beatty, last thought.
Well, the celebrity business is a double-edged sword, isn't it, huh?
Sure, I mean, it is. You can pay and pay.
Yeah.
After the profit comes the payment. Jack, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on Forums. In a moment, the real danger of the Martha Stewart case. This is On Point. Boston University journalism professor Carol Rivers is no great fan of Martha Stewart, but she warns that all the media attention the Queen of Domesticity is receiving for possible insider trading could prevent real change from coming to corporate boardrooms.
Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling stole their stocks in Enron for millions, while their employees were forbidden to sell their stock in the doomed company. But Lay and Skilling have faded from the media spotlight. WorldCom CEO Bernie Ebbers still has his yacht and his mansion in Florida, while his company, whose stock graced many a 401k, has tanked. Analyst Jack Grubman at Solomon Smith Barney was pushing WorldCom even as it sank. There are allegations that he was way too close to the companies whose stocks he was pushing and that his firm made millions from business deals with them. He's getting to retire with $20 million. But it's Martha who gets most of the ink most of the time. Blaming women for social ills goes back a long way in myth and prehistory. Pandora opened that box that let all the evils of the world out, according to myth. The sirens tried to lure noble Odysseus to his death, and Medusa had a head full of snakes that could turn a man to stone. Remember the last great American business scandal, the insider trading of the 80s? Some big players went to jail in those days, but the most hated icon of the business world was another minor female player, Leona Helmsley. The hotel magnate wrote off the swimming pool and some of the furniture at her estate as business rather than personal expenses, not exactly up there with Teapot Dome. But Leona got the full media treatment. She was dubbed the Queen of Mean on magazine covers. Leona, it seems, not only played around with the figures on her tax forms, but was really rotten to the help. She served 18 months in prison and paid $6.3 million in fines. In contrast, junk bond king Michael Milken, who pled guilty to 6 counts of fraud, served 2 years in prison, barely more than Leona. He has, since his release, been rehabilitated, devoting his time to good works and education and health. Part of Martha Stewart's problem, of course, is that she sells perfection, and everybody loves to see a Miss Perfect get her comeuppance. I've got no great affection for Martha because she peddles the idea that every woman can achieve the sort of household and cuisine that Victorian ladies were able to manage only with a house full of servants. But still, there's real danger in making Martha the big story. The more the TV spots and the news stories and the magazine covers focus on her, the more the public's attention is drawn away from practices that have become standard operating procedure in too many executive suites. While we, figuratively, stone Martha, the real bad actors fade into obscurity, getting to keep their mansions and their ill-gotten gains from stock options. Some of them will probably pop up running companies again. So, if you're chortling over Martha's distress because your souffles fall, your flowers wilt, and you can barely sew a button on, enjoy the moment. But don't be so distracted that you let the big fish keep on swimming away, and let same old be the order of the day in corporate America.
Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University. She read from her column, It's Not a Good Thing, that appeared in the Boston Globe. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUY.